And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting for the first time on Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the listener-supported network. So if you want the hosts of this network to keep on trucking and keep delivering the truth that you need so much injected directly into your brain places, then please go to freedomslips.com and make a donation today. My broadcast is also listener supported, so if you go to the vinnyeastwoodshow.com, I've been asking listeners for a number of years to donate on a monthly basis through the PayPal or the Kiwi Bank, if you happen to be one of the New Zealanders that listen into the broadcast, and give us $5 a month. It simply pays for the internet and the roof over my head, so I can keep full-time exposing scumbaggery and avoid working. By that I mean I'm employer-phobic. I have a phobia about gainful employment, all right? Last time somebody tried to give me a gainful employment gig, I had a panic attack the very night before. I had to put on my monkey suit and go out door knocking and making some money right there to survive. So it's just not going to happen. So welcome, ladies and gentlemen, and it's good to be back on air. It's been about a year since my last live broadcast of the Vinny Eastwood Show, and I simply did it out of respect to the previous network that I was on, because I believe in basically having a grace period. Now, speaking of grace, we've been having a large segment of debates online recently on my Facebook channel. Vinny Eastwood, that's Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question in Eastwood, as in go ahead, make my news. If you're listening into this one here, then please you can go and check out the Facebook site there and join the discussion, if you please. It was a really fun one today about naming a lost cause, and boy, oh boy, are there a hell of a lot of replies to that one. Now, one topic that was in fact quite shall we say, risque and very, very painful in a lot of ways, but also quite thrilling in others, was the topic of feminism. Now, I don't know how you feel about this this whole topic. And of course, the second any man mentions feminism, boom, is a terrible woman hating misogynist, etc. And by that I mean that's the extremist view. And one thing I've said for a long time is that extremism does not reflect the majority of the followers of any movement whatsoever. For example, Osama bin Laden does not reflect the goals and aims of the vast majority of Muslims, namely because the vast majority of Muslims weren't trained and financed by the CIA freaking A. Isn't that right, bro? That's right. So if anybody criticizes feminism, or me in particular at least, it's because I don't like the extremists within it. If you want equal rights with men, if you want equal pay, I have absolutely no problem with that. In fact, quite support it. And I've had a number of feminists on my show talking about this and hoping that they can indeed get the goals that they wish accomplished. However, one person who I am hopefully going to be talking to later tonight, maybe off air, is Erin Pizzi. And she was the Woman of the Year in 1977. She created the, I think, one of the first women's shelters in histories, you know. So if your husband's battering you as a woman and that kind of thing, she was basically opening up her home to allow these women and their children to come and stay there and have a safe refuge from violent husbands. Now, one thing she noticed is that it's not just husbands that can kill their spouse. And in fact, it's a different kettle of fish altogether when you think about it. She's from the United Kingdom, and over there, there are two women that are killed by their husbands each week that is reported in the mainstream media. What is not reported in the mainstream media is three husbands who kill themselves. That's a difference, and that's a statistic a lot of people do not hear. Now, of course, men and women approach problems in relationships very differently. Men have the physical strength to commit murder much more so than women do, and women have a far more capable mind of understanding emotions and also can really, really destroy a man much more than any man abusing another man can. You know what I'm saying? And what this means, at least to me anyway, is that men and women have actually had a fight started for them, all right? It's not like feminism came out all of a sudden and was incredibly well financed by the CIA and the Rockefeller Foundation, as is admitted, for no reason. And if you have a movement that has started up and it actually has a huge amount of financing behind it, you've got to firstly question exactly who's financing it and why. And Aaron Russo was a friend with Nicholas Rockefeller, and Nicholas told him something very interesting that totally blew his mind at the time. He asked him, "So, Aaron, what do you think women's liberation was about?" And he was pretty conventional thinking at the time. And he's like, "Well, I think it's about giving women equal standing in society and equal rights with men and equal pay." And Rockefeller says, "You're an idiot." He goes, "Well, why am I an idiot?" He says, "We, the Rockefellers, funded that movement. And the reason why is because you get to break up the family. You get to get all the children forcibly indoctrinated into schools much earlier on because one parent cannot stay home and take care of them, raise them, and teach them." Now, the very reason for this is that, of course, you can indoctrinate children to see the state as their parents in those formative years. And basically, it's so much easier to indoctrinate somebody if you don't have another person trying to basically teach you something. That's one agenda. The other agenda is they couldn't tax half of the population, you know, and now you can. So back in the day, and I fully am aware of these women's issues because I have spoken to a lot of women about this. There was little respect, little standing, and also if you have a look at the film North Country, where the first women ever were starting to go into the coal industry. I think it was in Montana or Michigan or something like that. And the amount of sexual abuse that they were given, assaults, making fun of by the male employees. You can watch that film and you're like, you cry, right? You really do, because you hate the people who think that others don't have a soul, don't have a conscience, don't have a right to be there, and have no reason to think that. If somebody works as hard as another, if somebody sacrifices what another sacrifices in order to get into the same job, anybody who tries to keep them out of it is a scumbag. That's my opinion. I could be wrong. Maybe people treating others unfairly is totally altruistic. I could be wrong, but I don't freaking think so. Fairness, equality, love. Are these pretty straightforward principles? I think so. And when we talk about extremists, you think about, let's say, extreme chauvinism. Extreme chauvinism hates women, hates anything that they stand for, thinks that they're weak and pathetic, that kind of thing. My opinion, scumbags. Extreme feminists hates men, thinks that all men are rapists and abusers and scumbag and trash and basically deserve no rights, parental or otherwise, and see men as basically just a sperm donor with a wallet. Scumbags. In between, however, you have the vast majority of society, men who respect women, women who respect men, and incidentally, these are the people who continue to breed, because they're actually capable of having a real relationship with one another. The extremists, on the other hand, often alienate the other sex. What if, and this is just a theory of mine, what if there is an agenda to divide men and women so that we will fight with each other, so that it will make it easier for the scumbags who currently control our society to enslave and dominate and kill us all? What if that was the case? And what Erin Lizzie, oh, sorry, I forget her name, Erin Izzy or something, I forget, but anyway, what she said was when she first came into this feminist movement, she was a housewife, and what she found was she got banned from every single feminist movement. And she was quite taken aback by this because she thought it was about women's issues. Now, she used to live in China, and her parents had been basically arrested by the communist Chinese, and she had to spend 4 years from the age of 3 till 7 in a Chinese care home. In that care home, the madam who was in fact running it was 6'7". very, very large, strong woman. She used to drive ambulances during the war, that kind of thing. And what she saw in this woman was strength, real feminine strength. And she aspired to be like her. And when she went into these feminist rallies, what she found was that they had been saying, you are oppressed, women of the world, you are absolutely oppressed, and men are the culprits, and the family needs to be disbanded because it's bad for the children. And she sat bolt upright and was kind of concerned about this because it was word for word what she had heard in the Chinese Communist Manifesto. And it became very obvious to her that the feminist movement, or at least the finances of it and the extremists of it, I don't know how many times I have to reiterate that, but was in fact a Marxist movement. And incidentally, it was a Marxist movement that destroyed the Marxist movement. At the time, in the 70s and late 60s, communism and people of the left were actually kind of all together until feminism started to give rise to this different faction. And that faction made them start infighting with other people of the left. And where there was once a credible threat to the so-called right-wing establishment and neoliberal policies, World Bank and all of that kind of jazz, there was now merely a fractured movement to resist it. And it's quite ironic, really, that something that was started out to help free women was actually used by the elite and the political fallout to enslave both men and women against their will through taxation and the ability to basically keep continuing rolling forward in whatever agendas they want in terms of the global elite without being impeded by people wanting their rights. Because, hey, it was so much easier when everybody's divided and conquered. The other question about this element is why people actually get into it. Now, if you get into it for purely altruistic reasons, no problem whatsoever. If you also, on the other hand, there's this element of lovelessness. Okay, and anybody who's argued with an extremist militant feminist, which is probably about maybe 1% of feminists, I'd you know, just say off the top of my head, I got no evidence to support that. It could be 99%, but I doubt it. Basically, there's no logic, there's no rationale, and there's certainly no respect. And I would say things like this on Facebook yesterday. I went on a kind of a big feminist analysis, and when I see injustice, when I see scumbaggery, when I see people not being listened to, my brain kind of kicks into hyperdrive and I make sure that there's some kind of realization, because I can't accept injustice, I can't accept scumbaggery, I can't accept abuse without trying to oppose it in some way, shape or form. So naturally, as I'm starting to talk about injustice and abuse and whatnot, one of these people comes out of the woodwork and starts abusing me. And she said, if I was in the same room with you, I would walk across the room and slap you across the face. And I say, well, hold on a second. You're against men committing violence upon women, and your first reaction to me even questioning, in a mild-mannered way, the objectives of a very small percentage of extremist feminists is to threaten me with violence, and that's okay. And you see the hypocrisy there, don't you? I don't like hypocrisy in any way, shape, or form. If you're full of crap, then for goodness sake, shush around me, because I will, at least if I can be bothered, try to correct you. And if you're insane or psychotic, and so psychotic that you don't know how psychotic you are, you get block, and the scum is gone. And you ain't never going to be talking to me again. Because there's no point in arguing with somebody who can't argue. There's no point rationalizing with somebody who isn't rational. There's no point talking to people who don't talk to you. They talk at you. And there's a very, very big difference. Now, I wonder, and this is quite an interesting thing, why this woman acted like this. And she said, well, Vinny, what would your wife think about this? And I said, well, she agrees with me. And then she told me to do my, and then she told me to go hang up my washing and empty the dishwasher. And I did. You know, sorry. I try to do my household chores and be a good husband and take care of her. And when she comes home from work and she's hurting in her lower back from all her gardening work, and she's down on her knees all day in the dirt, I give her a back massage. If she's been on her feet all day or something like that, I give her a foot massage, you know? And that, for some feminists, again, the extremists, makes me a very evil man who is trying to oppress my wife. I'm not making it up, bro. That's actually what she said. And the real question is here, can men and women really get along? Did we ever really get along? And I think we really did, you know, in some way, shape or form. And of course, with every society, it comes down to how you're raised. It doesn't matter what your government teaches you. It comes down to how your parents treated you, whether you had parents. And this is something this woman brought up, in fact, about love, being raised by loving parents, being shown love and being shown how to love. And only then can you actually give love to others. And I thought that was just such a profound thought, because I hadn't had a very good home life. Neither have my brother or my sisters. And we've all been damaged by the upbringing that we had. And it got me thinking about how many people are out there that are currently in relationships and don't have that necessary upbringing to actually know how to love. And coming into this movement, before meeting my wife, I was indeed a bit of a misogynist. And she kind of taught me how to love in that unconditional fashion. And I got involved with so many women, especially here in New Zealand, who are engaged headlong into activism, exposing scumbaggery, helping the general public, that it was almost as if the misogynistic me, I put a gun to its head and went pow and gone, freaking dead, you know? And he ain't getting back up anytime soon. And it's that kind of experience that can really shake your perceptions. Now, ironically, during these arguments that I was having with feminists, it was, in fact, them who was accusing me of having preconceived notions and being brainwashed by society because I'm questioning feminism. How ironic is that? The brainwashed telling you that you're brainwashed. The indoctrinated telling you that you're indoctrinated. The unthinking telling you that you can't think. All right? And this is kind of what psychopathy is really all about, is it not? They'll tell you everything that's wrong with them and say that it's actually about you, because they don't have any creativity. They don't have the ability to make something up. And I'm not saying, again, all feminists are psychopaths. I'm just saying psychopaths crave power and control. And if you want power and control, being at the head of a movement is a very good place to be. All right? That's it. End of story. If there's power in the center, psychopaths will gravitate towards it. Okay? Like the sun. It doesn't matter which planet you are. You will be drawn towards it. It will affect your gravity. That's what happens. Now, I feel that power and control are things that should be used incredibly sparingly. Incredibly sparingly. Because ultimately, anybody who craves it is probably craving it for the wrong reasons. And I've said for a long time that if you want a leader who's not going to betray you by lusting after the power and control and hence being corrupted by it, I think that they're probably going to misuse it. This is the reason why people who don't want power over other people, who don't want control over other people, should in fact be the people who we force into those positions of power and control against their will. You know, because ultimately I think if you're a politician, your job is to be a slave of the people. All right. If anything, we should have a politician uniform, that black and white stripy jumpsuits with a ball and chain, and just chain them to a desk. And you see, there you are. Now you're a public servant, bro. And but don't I get to take a bathroom break? Go in your pants. You know, mate, just if you want a just, fair and equal society, a movement generated out of hate for somebody is only going to generate more hate. I mean, did I miss something? Did I miss something? I mean, what's the ultimate crux here? Because if you think about it, it's like this. Feminism and chauvinism are both missing the point. It's not men oppressing women or vice versa that is the issue. The issue is, and always has been, ruthless criminal psychopathic control freaks oppressing every frickin' one. All right? They manipulate both men and women into doing the dirty work for them. That's the issue. I mean, hello? Did I miss something? No? I guess I didn't. So when you distract yourself in finding that kind of thing, as I did yesterday, I'll admit, you know, I'm guilty of that. it's very, very difficult to pull away because there's this constant argumentativeness and a constant deliberate misinterpretation. So, for example, if I mentioned the hypocrisy of, what's her name, Sarkeesian, I think. She was talking about the objectification of women in video games and films, you know, like wearing scantily clad outfits and having a nice bum and beautiful rank and whatnot. Now, I would say that that's absolutely true. There's plenty of objectification of women in film and media. And what I think is that not only is this part of a social engineering program in order to make us more sexually charged into a lower brainwave state where we're thinking about sex and money and power and things like that, all the things that psychopaths crave, then it's also going to start to reflect in the outside of society. So, for example, you can walk down any major street in any major city in the world, and you will see scantily clad women. All right? Take my word for it. And they're beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. And then, when you look at them, they slap you because you're objectifying them, even though they spent hours and hours in front of a mirror turning themselves into an object of desire. And that seems crazy to me. I mean, what's the point? I even made the point that, well, what if I complimented a woman for looking incredibly beautiful? And the response is, well, why would you want to compliment her? Because men only want one thing. And I say, well, no, I'm married and I often, you know, go out places and everything. And if I see somebody who's incredibly well dressed and looks really spectacular, man or woman, I'm compelled to say something. Just go, bro, that is an incredible shirt. Or excuse me, that is a wonderful dress. These kind of things. And they walk away with a smile on their face. Am I an evil man for doing so? No! I'm just not, okay? And anybody who wants to argue that point, you're wrong. It's just that frickin' simple. And it comes down to this sort of rage, purposeful misinterpretation, and ultimately, brainwashing. All right, really. I've never seen anybody in the entire world who hates a group of people without ever meeting them, without ever talking to them, without even bothering to hear their side of the story, who hates them because of their own volition, that nothing happened to them, it just, you know, happened by osmosis or something. No, you've been indoctrinated into it. You've been brainwashed into it. Hate breeds hate. Is that pretty straightforward? Love breeds love. I think that's pretty clear too. And so if you're going to be involved in any movement that is led by people, sometimes psychopaths, sometimes just idiots, who are talking about hate for the opposite sex, hate for a particular racial group, hate for people of an economic circumstance or something of that nature, they're dangerous. And incidentally, they will call people who criticize them dangerous, right? Exactly how it works. If you're a Nazi, call your opponents Nazis. That's what you got to do. Otherwise, people will think that you are actually a Nazi and will think that your opponents aren't full of crap. And you need to switcheroony that and think that your opponents are full of crap and that they're Nazis and you're not, and you always tell the truth. This is the same game that politics have been playing for a long time. It's because feminism is not a movement for women, all right? It's a political movement. and it's there to accomplish political aims. It's pretty straightforward, don't you think? And you can't legislate rights into people's hands. You really do have to fight for them. And that's the part of feminism that I actually truly respect and admire and give airtime to when I can, because it is those strong women who have real feminist power, feminine power, should I say, who actually do advance women down a greater path. That's what I like. That's what I want to support. I don't want to support hate. I don't want to support ridicule. I don't want to support name calling. I don't want to support violence. I don't want to support people who treat the innocent as criminals. There was even a group of feminists in a university in America this one time who took pictures of completely random students, men of course, and posted them up on a wall and said, potential rapists. All right. That's nasty. That's cruel. I mean, they're trying to make a political point that any man is a potential rapist. Well, you could make that argument about anything or anybody. Is not every woman a potential gold digger, you know, by that same yardstick? It's not fair. It's not got evidence behind it. It's not actually striking at a real issue or a real core. Now, sexual harassment is a nasty thing, and I've seen it happen, and I've seen what it does to women, and I know that it can destroy their lives. My mother was a victim of it, and it didn't help her much. It makes you emotionally frail. Now, people who traumatize others and basically make them have to live with that trauma for the rest of their life, incapable of putting it into a suitcase and popping it in the cupboard and actually getting over it, are terrible. It's just horrible. I have empathy and respect for people who have to go through that kind of trauma. And I know that it damages them. And I know that they develop social problems and difficulty in reintegrating into a normal society because some scumbag decided to objectify them, abuse them, and hurt them. And they have to carry that bag with them for the rest of their life. And that was in the choice of said scumbag, not that person. It is not the fault of somebody who gets raped. All right? It's the fault of the rapist. It's not the fault of a country that gets invaded. It's the fault of the invader. And I don't like this whole mentality where everybody, for some reason, is a really, really evil person because I said so. I don't like that idea. It's really, really callous. It's cruel. And you can destroy people's lives, in some cases, irrecoverably. Now, you know how defamation's illegal? You know, it's illegal to tell a lie about somebody and actually defame their character. It's not illegal to file a false rape claim against somebody. Did you know that? You know what happens to a guy if he gets a false rape claim? Everybody thinks he's a rapist. And he has his entire life destroyed, his family, his job, and he'll find it very, very difficult to even find a place to live, let alone get another job. And if it turns out that that claim wasn't true, how exactly do you get back for that? And what kind of punishment is there for the woman who filed false charges? And the answer is nothing. Nothing. You're screwed, mate. That's what it takes in today's society. One accusation that goes through the media, doesn't matter if there's any evidence, you are guilty until proven innocent. And when you are proven innocent, in the papers and everything, make a retraction on the 19th page of the paper or something like that, that doesn't exactly help the stigma go away, does it, bro? No, it doesn't. Now, let's think about mental illness. If people are in a relationship with what they call, I think there was some kind of philosopher who's talking about dangerous women. And he talks about these ones who draw you in, who play the victim all the time, who are really good at manipulation, who are absolutely incredible when it comes to making you feel sorry for them. And in so doing, a lot of really innocent, naive men actually get into these really destructive relationships with women who are unbalanced. And the reverse is also true. There are many men out there who, again, have a lot of mental illness and problems in their personal life that they bring into a relationship. And those are the men that wind up hurting their spouse. And, of course, again, switching back, the reverse is true. Now, in New Zealand, at least, there is a child protective custody kind of feud going on. And if you are the woman, you get your kids. It's just that simple. There is no ifs, buts, maybes. Doesn't matter if you are a prostitute who is on heroin, you get the kid. Doesn't matter if your husband is a professional sound engineer with a studio apartment in the central business district. He doesn't get the kid. It doesn't matter if she's lied and he's got proof that she lied. She gets the kid. You understand how that works? It's called the family court system. And this is why so many men, way more than women, commit suicide. Let's think about that. Think about the suffering, the pain. For the parents out there, imagine just for a moment, if you will, I don't know if you're driving or whatever, but, you know, just close your eyes for a second and just think about this. You're with a woman who you love, and she starts to make you feel bad about yourself. You catch her lying, that sort of things. And it goes on for years, and you've got a couple of kids with them, your beautiful daughter and your wonderful baby boy, and she decides that she's going to leave you. And you come home to an empty house. Everything's been taken out of the cupboards. Everything's gone. And you have to butter your bread with your credit card. And then you find out where she is. You find out where your kids are. And she's got a restraining order on you. So your own children are off limits to you. Permanently. Because this woman who you thought you loved, who you thought loved you, betrayed you, betrayed your trust, and is now keeping your children from you, and the law is helping her to do so. Let's say you haven't seen your children in a year after this. Let's say your bank account has been completely drained, that you had to sell all your assets, and you currently went from a relatively affluent existence, and you now haven't seen your children in years, and the courts won't help you, the police won't help you, the medical doctors that do the reports won't help you either. Doesn't matter if your children are being raped in a state house. It doesn't matter. If you're a man, you have no rights. That's basically the law as it stands here in New Zealand. And according to a lot of the people that I've interviewed over the years, the same thing goes for those of you in the United States. The same thing goes for those of you in the United Kingdom. The same exact system is global. Now, I'm not blaming feminism for this. In fact, feminism had very little to do with this particular element. It's called human trafficking, right? And this is what I want to actually kind of get into next, is that there is a massive system of child trafficking that is going on, that is being perpetrated by the very institutions that are set up that say that they're there to protect your children, all right? For example, in child protective services in the United States, you're something like 9 times more likely to be sexually abused while in child protective services custody than with your own parents. I will say that again. You're 9 times more likely to be sexually abused if you're in child protective services custody than you are with your own parents. That's the truth of it. And it is a horrible thing. The worst topic in the entirety of all the truth movement of anything that I've ever exposed or been exposed to, this is the number one. Child kidnapping, pedophilia, massive quantities of money is going into this. There have been judges in Los Angeles that have been exposed, taking $20,000 per child. They literally kidnap your kids and then sell them to pedophiles through the court system. That's how it works. And that's why men don't have any rights in the court system. That's why they don't require any evidence in the family court system. Because if there was any evidence, there'd be a problem. That's why they don't allow any media reporting in the family court system. Because if there was any reporting, there'd be a problem. And the pedophiles wouldn't get their goodies. And that sounds callous, I know, and it's freaking disgusting, and it's horrible, and if your stomach isn't twisting right now, as it is for me, while I'm sitting here in front of this microphone, there's something wrong with you. There's something wrong with society. There's something wrong with all of us. I can guarantee that. Nobody's perfect, and that means there's something wrong with us. And once we think that everything's all perfect and hunky-dory, that's when your world comes crashing in on you. That's when something bad will happen to you that is undeniable. And if it ain't happening to you yet, it might. It might not. However, my philosophy is that none of us are free unless all of us are free. I think that's pretty straightforward, don't you? Unless we stop these criminal systems from operating. And there's a couple of elements and ways in order to do this. Now, firstly, they operate in the shadows. It's not public knowledge. Okay? They don't come out and say, oh, by the way, we're a child trafficking cartel. They're not going to do that, bro. And if you come out and do that to them, they will take your kids or they will take your home. And if they can't get you to shut up that way, they might wind up taking your life. And there have been plenty of people who have been killed trying to expose these scumbags. And I fear for my life on occasion because of the fact that I'm actually willing to talk about it where others are not. And I think that it is indeed a measure of manhood, of courage, of whatever, of honor, whatever you want to call it, to actually talk about things and expose things that are horrible, that are happening to other people, even when you don't have a stake in it, and even when it makes you feel bad just to talk about it. I had a woman named Karen come into my house, and she married into the family that writes the child abuse legislation in New Zealand. True story. They got like Queen's Medal crosses and all of that kind of stuff from the Empire. Totally reputable, amazingly well-connected people. And they start playing grooming games with her child. She finds out that they've got a beach house called the Candy House that has soundproof walls and windows. Just hearing that alone would have been bad enough. But she was around here for 6 hours. And for 6 hours, it did not stop. There was another thing being said, and another, and another, and another, and another. This is how badly traumatizing it can be for people to go through this. And it's so badly traumatizing for them to go through it that for you to even hear about it traumatizes you. I interviewed a woman in the United States who's in D.C., what was she doing? She was investigating a Freemasonic a charity called the Jesters. Now, do you know what a jester does? It's somebody who entertains the court. And this Freemasonic offshoot was actually, and I'm not kidding here, they were involved very deeply with a number of charitable hospitals like burn units for children and things like that. And regularly, these children would be taken on ship cruises in the Caribbean with a bunch of old men. What do you think they were getting up to? Okay? It's nasty, bro. It's real nasty. And you don't want to talk about it. You don't want to hear about it, which is why you must talk about it, which is why you must hear about it. Because the longer that people stay silent, the more children that will be, the more children will continue to be abused. All right? And that's basically it. It comes down to moral obligation. It's horrible, it's nasty, it's disgusting, but we must endure and we must talk about it Otherwise, it will continue, unabated. Only once you kick over the rocks do the roaches scatter. And that's what we've got to do. Just because of the moral obligation inherent in protecting innocent children from ruthless criminal sociopathic psychopathic pedophiles. Right? I think that's pretty straightforward, you know? Why not? Why wouldn't you want to expose pedophiles? Maybe because they'll frack your life up? Maybe. However, sometimes throughout history, pioneers, for example, they gave up the comfort, they gave up their safety, and then sometimes they had to give up their lives in order to build the West. And had they not done that, America wouldn't be here, would it? Same with the settlers in New Zealand. Even in the early 1900s, it would sometimes take months to get a tractor part or something like that to get delivered here. So they had to figure out how to make everything work without any resources available to them. And what this does is this creates a mentality, a resourcefulness, the ability to do the impossible with what you don't even have. And they're amazing. You should see some of the stuff that people are inventing here in this country. You should see some of the things that people are knocking out in their garages right now, and you can point at any state in the union. And I can guarantee you there's some pretty bright sparks out there working away at this shed on some kind of piece of technology that will blow people's freaking mind. That's the human capacity to solve problems. That's the human capacity for creativity. It's not a psychopathic capacity. They don't solve problems. What they do is they create them, and then when everybody figures out that there's a problem, you then come and propose your own solution, which will only give you more power and control and dominance over people's lives. I don't like that mentality. I don't like being controlled. I don't like having people tell me what to do. I don't like authority. Just in general, authority has to be earned. The same as respect. If somebody has no respect for you, why would you respect them? There's very little reason to do so, isn't there? It's coming to a head now, and everybody should be feeling it. I'm not sure if I can make carte blanche statements like everybody, because I know that I'm probably only talking to about maybe 5% of those in the population that can actually think. And most of them aren't even listening to this broadcast, mind you, because that would be like one of them, hundreds of millions of people, and just don't have that kind of audience just yet. And I think when we are talking about our lives, when we're talking about the lives of children, there is a different set of priorities that have to be in stake. Okay, so let's say, for example, you needed to, I don't know, fill up your car with the tank of gas or something like that. And somebody says, well, you don't have the money, bro. And you go, no, I don't. And I say, well, what if I take your arm? You know, I'll just cut off your arm and I'll feed that to my dogs. That's worth about $80 to fill up your gas tank. How about that? And you go, bro, I'm using it. And he goes, well, you're going to have to go without your gas then. You say, but if I go without my gas, I can't go to my job. And if I can't go to my job, I can't earn money. And if I can't earn money, I can't feed my kids. And if I can't feed my kids die. All right, here's my arm, you know. And that's kind of how it has to work. You kind of have to figure out exactly what your priorities are, what you're willing to give up in order to survive. And that's a really, really harsh situation to be in. And it's very uncomfortable. And a lot of people never get into that kind of situation. And they avoid these situations as long as they possibly can. And I can't blame anybody for that. You know, I don't see anybody going out and trying to go, you know, I think I'm going to mess up my life today. It's going to be a really, really fantastic idea, you know, because I've just become too comfortable. You know, I haven't learned anything in about 6 years other than what I've already known. And I haven't actually changed my lifestyle any. So, I don't know, maybe I'll go out and start a fight with a cop or something, you know, go down for a grievous bodily harm. Yeah, I think a stint in jail would do me some good.
It's freaking insane, bro. All right. Now, I'm not saying go out and do that because it's just not a bright idea. You're not going to accomplish a whole lot, are you? However, there is another question. and this has been something that's been on my mind for quite a long time. How necessary is trauma in the learning process? All right, really think about it. I remember when I got busted for weed when I was a 19-year-old, you know, totally naive, voted for the party and confessed everything to the cops because they said, oh, if you're honest with us, we'll go easy on you. And what they meant was, if you're honest with us, it's easier for us to convict you and easier for us to make sure that you have no defense of any kind of, and easier for us to make up extra evidence, easier for us to destroy your freaking life. That's what they meant by it. And played with this word magic game. And that experience was so traumatic for me. It was like the worst of my life. And it's like 10 years ago. 10 years ago. And it's still fresh in my mind as if it was yesterday. I can't get over it. I don't know how. And it's kind of like when Batman got his parents killed right in front of him. I don't think Batman ever really got over that. But what he did figure out is that he sought a means to fight injustice because he was a victim of it. And so is the truth for many, many other people who fight injustice today. It's a very, very straightforward archetype. Something will try to destroy you, and instead of letting it destroy you, you fight it. And eventually, if you are strong enough, if your dedication does not waver, if you're willing to make the sacrifice that is required of you in order to make the difference you seek, you will be successful. And if you are not, there is a chance, just a chance, that you will inspire others, maybe those that are yet to be born, into following in your footsteps and completing the work that you could not do on your own. This is what I wish for all of the listeners, this is what I wish for all of humanity, is to follow that moral obligation, to take your pain, to take your trauma, and to make something of it, to serve humanity, because it needs you. It needs all of us. The only question is whether or not we are going to answer the call. Will we stand up? Will we fight? Will we brave discomfort and pain so that we can build a better tomorrow for those who have yet to be born? Will we do it? I think most people will not. That does not dishearten me. Why? Because I know, and I have seen, that it does not take a cast of thousands. It does not take enormous organizations. It does not take billions of dollars to change the world. And as the creator of Apple said, it is those who are crazy enough to think that they can change the world who do. So be crazy, ladies and gentlemen. Go nuts. Go for your life, son. What have you got to lose? I mean, really? There's a bunch of ruthless criminal sociopaths in charge of the country. In charge of the world. And you think you're going to escape it? there's just no way. You're going to die. The only question is whether or not you want to die on your feet, fighting for what is right, or on your knees, executed by the hands of evil. When you want to make a difference, when you have no other choices available to you, that is when you will indeed choose to make that difference. I can't stress this enough and use myself as an example. I could use many others, but I know myself slightly more than I know others. I wanted to make a difference in the global truth movement. I felt that New Zealand was too small. There's not enough people here. There won't be enough audience. There won't be enough support by my nation alone, especially because the whole world is in chaos right now. And I don't want to install order. I simply want to expose some scumbaggery. All right, that's it. Just wanted to expose a little bit of scumbaggery. And initially, all I really had was the ability to go out to New Zealand protests, New Zealand public meetings. And you know what was funny? After listening to Patriot Talk Radio from the United States for years, and then going out and actually engaging with the activists here in my homeland, I realized that our issues were the same. There is no difference between an American and a New Zealander. We have the same overlords, the same problems, the same institutional scumbaggery going on. You got fluoride in the water, bro? We've got fluoride in the water. You got chemtrails over your head being sprayed like cockroach? We got those too. You got a corrupt government full of scum that are basically unaccountable to anybody, including the people? We've got that in spades. Everything that is going on in your country is going on here too. Except there's a different accent. There's a different name. There's a different face. A different word. A different color. A different organization. But they all follow the exact same template. And there is patently no real difference. And I think that the globalists have tried to divide us. We are brothers and we are sisters in this fight. And yet, we fight amongst ourselves. Even those of us who realize what is really on the line here and who the true enemy is. And we forget it on occasion because we prefer to indulge in our personal vendettas. We prefer to infight and attack others and be our own enemy rather than contributing and helping people in their darkest hour against the darkness that besets them. Not me, Pumpkin Pie. Not I, Pumpkin Pie, should I say. I don't think that's something I'm really capable of vibing with. I mean, I went through high school and I got like ridiculed and abused and teased the whole freaking life. So what better preparation to be in the truth movement? You know, you ever think that maybe, I don't know, getting abused as a truther ain't going to happen to you? Because, you know, you're talking about conspiracies. Mate, you will have more people than you could ever conceive of coming at you from every single direction to give you grief about it. Oh, you're crazy. Oh, you're a conspiracy theorist. You know, they just label you. And I'm quite an interesting character because I'm very, very difficult to put in a box. You could, I mean, the funniest thing is, I get called a left winger by right wingers and and the reverse as well. I'm not a left winger. I'm not a right winger. I think both wings need to be clipped. And that bird needs to come tumbling down. Like an asteroid hitting the earth full of feathers and rib cage carcass. Die! Just die! I'm really, really getting sick of it. It's a stupid debate. And you know why the debate's been going on so long between left and right wing? It's because both sides have been co-opted by the same criminal scumbags that want to kill and enslave everybody. I mean, how is that not obvious? That both sides of the political debate are wrong and always have been wrong. How else would a debate keep going for so frickin' long unless both of them were frickin' wrong? And that's why both of them hate people who stay outside of their false freaking paradigm. Wake up! You know, the time is now. We'll be back after the break on freedomslips.com.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.